Protectors, another great guest today. Before we get to my guest, let's talk about OSD, Outperform, Serve, and Develop. It's a nonprofit that I've been working with for a while. I want you to do me a favor after this podcast or take a pause and go check it out. Check out weareosd.org. Excellent nonprofit. Thank you. Today, Luis Alvarez, MIT graduate, PhD, former military intelligence, MI. So he's got all the acronyms. Incredible guest, doing a lot of excellent research into targeted regeneration. Awesome scientific stuff. We're going to get into it. I'm a doctor, but not that kind of doctor. So, Luis, how are you?
Great, Jason. Great to be here. Thank you.
Luis, military intelligence, tough career field, so much to it. And it seems like MI and biotech, not really in the same stratosphere, but it seems like your mind is always going. Are you one of those type of people that's like, hey, you know what? I need to keep working on a new mission. Talk about you go to West Point and then you branch MI. What was your military experience like?
Right. So West Point, I was fortunate enough to earn what's called a Hertz Foundation Fellowship. And it's one of the few fellowships back then that the Army would say, yeah, you can take 2 years and do a master's with it and then come back to the Army in a tactical unit and do your company command before you can use the remaining 3 years to do a PhD. So my first 2 years were at MIT. It was very strange. I had my lieutenant bars and everything. I never actually wore a second lieutenant rank while I was at MIT. But when I finished there, I called my branch and asked them where I should go. They said the greatest opportunities for you are in Korea. So I ended up going to the 2nd Infantry Division in Korea. And that was really probably one of my favorite assignments in MI. It was really a rich place to learn how to do military intelligence at that time.
Yeah, I can only imagine Korea at MI, man. Especially this was what, 99, 2000?
That's right. Yeah, it was right at the turn.
Yeah, a little bit. Because you and I are both, we're pre 9/11, then post 9/11. And you could completely see how the world changed after 9/11, especially with the Army and everything else. Now, you know, I was infantry. And when I got recalled, I always assumed that they would recall MI people before me because my wife was MI. And I'm like, man, here I am just a low level grunt dude and they're going to call me back up. They need MI people. But what was it like post 9/11 to have everything change? And especially when you're academically inclined and you want to keep pushing forward, but then all of a sudden we're at war and your whole dynamic changes. We went from the Cold War dynamic where prep, thinking, hey, you know what? We're going to have this major large scale battle with either the Russians are later on with the Koreans, and now we're in this global war on terrorism, and you're thrust right into it.
Yeah, it really was a stake in the ground, so to speak. The way we operated before was just out the window, and now we had this new focus. 9/11 happened in the last week of my training at Fort Huachuca in the MI Advanced Course, the Military Intelligence Advanced Course. And I was already slated to go to Fort Hood. So when I showed up at Fort Hood, we were basically getting ready to deploy. And so I went to the 1st Cav Division, the Field Artillery. So I was a division targeting officer. And the 4th Infantry Division ended up deploying before us, and we went after them. But it was with the 1st Cav that I rotated over and went to Baghdad. And in fact, I have to credit that experience in combat with crystallizing in my mind what it was I wanted to do with all the scientific training I had. It was really driven by the problems that warfighters were having as they came back with injuries. When I came back to the U.S., I said, I want to devote the rest of my time and my PhD work to solving a problem that's going to help restore warfighters. So that really was a defining moment in my life. It's strange that combat or wartime experiences would then define a scientific trajectory going forward.
Yeah, I was wondering how you got into all of this because, you know, looking at your background, it would seem like you would go straight into like some sort of tech AI. But having that combat experience, having the post 9/11 experience, it affects you. It changes you. Hence, you know, you see so many people change their career trajectory to kind of be more of a helper and a healer rather than kind of like self-absorbed, if that makes sense. Some people, like, you know, back in the day, is like if you went to West Point or you went to any other commissioning source, you were going to get an MBA or you're going to come on and do something that's going to be like global conquering. But I love the idea of Theradaptive and targeting where these injuries are. It almost does seem like you're taking a look at it, like you're doing an all sorts intel scrub of it and saying, okay, where's that injury? How can we target it? And what do we need to target it? It's not all, you know, technical. There are actually so many things to it. Can you explain it to me?
Sure.
Explain it to us, because I love this stuff.
You know, it's actually sometimes the hardest problems are the most simple ones to describe. You know, what I saw from many injured service members that I served with was that they would come back to the States, their lives would be saved through the miracle of modern medicine, but they would have a limb that wouldn't work and would have to be amputated eventually. The question was why? Well, why can't medicine restore that limb? And it turns out that medicine really currently, even today, is not able to regenerate certain pieces of that limb. So for example, if you can't get the bone to heal, it doesn't matter that they've saved your limb, it's gonna be a burden. And so a lot of times the recommendation is to amputate. So it's a very simple problem. How do you get a small piece of tissue that seems small to regenerate? And if you can do that, then you can save a limb, you can transform someone's life. So that that whole problem is what drives the scientific question. How do I control how the body does this, which leads you to the next step, which is how do I control proteins in the body so that I can get the body to regenerate tissue? So, you know, it's a thread here that connects all those ideas.
So you have a theory. You know what you want to do. You think it's great. You're smart enough to do it, but you have to build a team to get it done. That's one of the things great of bringing someone from the military background, someone with experience, real world experience, putting them in a room and saying, okay, you know what? I need to build a team. What's your team like? And was there any like hurdles that you guys had to jump through, like building this team?
Yeah. So the Theradaptive was started while I was still in the Army, so I couldn't participate full time. And so I had to rely on the team to lead the day-to-day activities, but give them the purpose and direction, as you know, from military parlance, you know, purpose, motivation, and direction. So you borrow a lot from military leadership to say, you know, in the absence of further details, here's what we have to do. And that's really valuable in the business world or on a scientific endeavor as well. So the task was really to find people that have initiative, they know how to carry out a mission, know how to anticipate what the next steps are. So people that are scientifically talented, but also have the personality to deal with uncertainty. And those two things together really make a recipe for great teams.
So it must have been kind of exciting to actually get out of the service and focus on this full time. Did you get your PhD while you were still in the service, or did you get that out of?
Yeah, still in the service. So when I got back from Iraq, I actually applied back to MIT, and that's went there and did the PhD in the laboratory of Linda Griffith, who is a pioneer in the field of regenerative medicine. She actually was a postdoc in Bob Langer's lab, who did the mouse on the back of the ear, if you remember from the
90s.
Yeah. So it was a great environment there. MIT's biological engineering department was just a wonderful place, very welcoming, and welcoming of military, you know, veterans. So it was really rich, a nice place. And that set the stage for developing these ideas. So, retiring from the military, the company actually is quite self-sustaining. So there are people who are running it day to day, and they're able to execute on that mission and push towards the goal of getting these products approved by the FDA.
Cool. Now, I was going to ask you that. You took the question right out of me. I'm like, how is it going to like an MIT or something like that as a service member, a service woman, especially, you know, being combat veterans? I mean, a lot of us, you know, like me, I went to college before and after, but it's like different. And it's a lot different for the soldiers and sailors and airmen and everybody else out there going to college, especially like an MIT. So you said they were very well adaptive to have you in.
Yes. And you know, you don't immediately expect that, right? You hear about academia being sometimes sheltered or perhaps not aligned with the military ethos,
mm-hmm.
to put it lightly. But Doug Laufenberger, who was the chair of the department, was actually quite enthusiastic and supportive. And I felt almost taken aback by that. I thought, you know, to say, yes, you can come here is one thing, but then to actually be very, you know, be an advocate for you is quite another. So I really have to credit them for doing that.
MIT is like, you know, my last guest was Kevin Fleick. He's coming on this week. I'm broadcasting a show this week, and he actually got his dual masters from MIT and Harvard. So I'm excited to see, I'm a big proponent of education. I'm excited to see military members go and get higher education. I'm always a huge proponent for that. And we are going to get more into Theradaptive, but what would you recommend for anybody that wants to attend one of these major educational institutions? How do you prepare for something like that?
Know what you want, work towards that goal every day, and don't be discouraged by the friendly bureaucracy of the military, whatever service you're in. Persist in requesting what you want. You know, you'll be surprised. I think nowadays, actually, there are many more opportunities. West Point, I went back to go teach as my last assignment in the Army, and what I was surprised was when I was there, maybe only a small handful of people could go on to grad school, whereas now there are many more opportunities. So I suspect the same is true at ROTC detachments and other, you know, commissioning sources. Take advantage of that. Know what you want and be deliberate about it. And there's one little maybe tip that I want to include here that maybe only folks in the military might understand. There's a form called the 4187, which is a one-page form. It has a big blank space at the bottom. What I did is I filled that space with things that I wanted and sent it in to what was called Human Resources Command. They laughed immediately and said, you know, I had said, send me, when I got back from Iraq, I said, you're going to send me to get a PhD, then I'm going to do command here, and I'm going to get a utilization tour. They laughed. They had a good time with that. I told my commander, Colonel Stephen Lanza, who retired as a four-star many years later, he said, give me 10 minutes. He mm-hmm. called. I got a call back from HRC, your 4187 has been approved. So to me, a 4187 is more lethal than an M16.
Yeah. That is an absolutely excellent point, because I'm in the federal government and we use what they call a lot of different agencies use individual development plans, IDPs, mm-hmm. which is essentially a 4187, except, you know, it's the federal government, so it's a lot more convoluted. You don't just get one block. You get like 75 pages in duplicate to figure it out. But I always tell people, I'm like, you know what? You have to have a plan. This is your destiny. This is your job, your responsibility. And the onus is on you to do it. And nobody's going to hand you anything. A lot of us have a PhD. You have a master's. Everything is still not guaranteed to you just because you have those designations before, after, in the middle of your name. You have to go out there and you have to get it. And a lot of that has to do with networking. A lot of it has to do with building relationships. Just like you said, they got a good laugh about it, but you sat back, said, okay, I'll go talk to the general or then colonel and get it done. You have to make these decisions. Just like you said, hey, you know what? I have an idea. I went to combat. We know our service people are getting injured in devastating ways, losing limbs. Maybe they don't have to lose limbs. Maybe that bone can get regenerated. Maybe the tissue can get regenerated. There's got to be something we could do. We are a young technology-based society or technology-based humanity, if you really think about it. technology is only really 100 years old if you think about like real technology. And the leaps and bounds we're getting this past two decades, because we've been at war, because we have sample populations, because we've had hundreds of thousands of troops injured, we could study them and we could target. That's what I want to hear from you is like, what can we do to support your studies and your, and really just helping the soldiers? Cause that's essentially what you're doing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the wars have been going on for a long time. They're still going on. There are folks over there away from their families, but as you know, public interest comes and goes. And I think one thing that was really enabling for this type of research is support from the military, medical, and congressionally directed medical programs. In fact, Theradaptive started basically with support from the DoD to do research that's risky that no one else will fund. So if as individual citizens, if we want to get involved, I would say we should advocate to our elected representatives that we should continue to support the congressionally directed medical research program and the military medical research programs, because there are many technologies that have come out of that that otherwise nobody else would have supported.
Well, you know, there's so much of the, you know, when you talk about civilians, and there's only a certain amount of us that have deployed, a certain amount that are connected to the military community, to veterans. But this has such a civilian aspect to it that it goes well beyond the military population, well beyond war injuries. If you could get something like this off the ground, this is life-changing for so many people that maybe they're injured in a horrible car wreck. Maybe they're shot in the street. Maybe there are ways that we could use this to not only help those in war and combat, but shift that to the civilian focus. I mean, it's common sense, but sometimes you just have to hear it over and over again that says this has civilian applications.
Absolutely. And in fact, the best medical technologies to help warfighters are ones that also have a large civilian market, because that will sustain that technology. It's not something that only depends on when wars are happening, right? You want something that is self-sustaining that you can just grab off the shelf and use. So the technologies that Theradaptive is developing, for example, have applications for back pain repair, you know, spinal fusion, accidents, you know, traffic accidents. And so the beauty of that is that it creates sustainability. And then when a military physician says, hey, I need to regenerate bone, I can grab this product off the shelf and use it and not have some kind of orphaned military specific product that is not sustainable.
How close are we to something like that?
So, for example, the lead trauma product will be going into human clinical studies next year. So, you know, it takes usually 10 to 15 years to get a drug into the market, and many, many tens of millions of dollars. And so the efforts of the team at Theradaptive have really accelerated this. So by next year, we'll be first in human. And then after that, usually it's another four and a half to 5 years before you get market approval. But you're still helping patients during those clinical trials. People can, you know, participate in those trials.
Very interesting. So where can we find you at? And where can we find more information about this at?
So the company is actually in Frederick, Maryland. It's a self-sustaining operation down there. Team running that product development effort. The website, of course, is theradaptive.com. And it's a small company, but with a tight-knit team there in Frederick, Maryland, close to Fort Detrick, if you're familiar with that area, and has really benefited from that ecosystem that's grown up there in Maryland.
Luis, I really appreciate you joining me today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Jason, thank you so much. And I would just add, if you can support anyone out there that wants to support these types of activities, let your elected representatives know how important military medical research is, and implore everyone to join the effort.
Yeah, we'll throw a link up to your company as well. And I really appreciate this.
Jason, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.